This is file 3, cycle 4. Today's date is November 7th, 2018. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Jay Kolpitz, who is going to talk about his experiences in the Air Force, his training in the Air Force, his service with the Trans World American Airlines, Nippon Airlines, and anything else he wants to talk about. But first, we're going to start with a really difficult question. What is your name?
Jay Kolpitz.
And how did you come to the area?
Well, I was, when I got out of the Air Force, I was based with TWA at Newark Airport in New Jersey. I was single, and I moved to New Jersey temporarily. And excuse me. And when I got married and children came along, we decided we needed to go someplace more permanent. So a gentleman suggested I look up here to Lakeville or Salisbury area, and we ended up finding a place through Al Borden.
Oh, bless his heart!
And we've been there ever since. We came in 1975.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm going to backtrack now to the Air Force. Yeah. When did you join the Air Force?
Well, I went to Boston University, graduated in 1959, and while I was in, my father had been in the Army Air Corps during World War II, so I had sort of a idea I'd like to do some service in the military before I got into anything in real life. And so I was in the ROTC program at Boston University, and when I graduated, they made me a second lieutenant in the United States Air Force. And from there, I went into flight training and a career in the Air Force.
And you said that your dad used to take you to see airplanes.
Oh, yes. He was based in Florida at MacDill Air Force Base, which was in central Florida. And before he moved the family down there, and before he went to service overseas in Okinawa during the war, but while he was in Florida, he used to take me out to the airport to see the airplanes, and I became very interested in airplanes when I was very young. I think I was probably 5 or 6 years old at the time.
But it was something that really interested you.
Yes, yeah, I became very interested in airplanes at that time. So.
Where did you do your flight training?
Well, they first sent me down to
Bainbridge?
Yeah, Bainbridge, Georgia. And we had what they call primary training there, which was about 6 months long. And from there, they sent us to training in Laredo, Texas, at Laredo Air Force Base. And from there, we graduated with wings, they said, second lieutenant in the Air Force. And based on your standing in the class, you could choose your next assignment in the regular Air Force. So I ended up, I think I was sixth in the class, so I chose to go to Perrin Air Force Base in Texas to fly interceptor aircraft, fighter interceptor airplanes.
Ooh.
Which I went there for training. So,
wow.
Yeah. And finishing up there, I was based or sent to an active duty squadron, which was the 498th Fighter Interceptor Squadron at Spokane Airport in Washington. At a private airport, a commercial airport named Geiger Field, So they called us the Geiger Tigers.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so there I was transitioned into the F-106, which they called the Delta Dart.
The Delta Darts?
Yeah, and from that I flew that for the remainder of my career in the Air Force on active duty. From there, well, we were in what they called the Air Defense Command, which was our responsibility was to protect the borders of the United States against foreign aggressors.
Mm-hmm.
So the aircraft were our duties. We would be on alert on a number of times during the week to intercept any foreign aircraft that was perceived coming toward the United States. From Spokane, Washington, there wasn't much active duty, but much foreign aggression from Canada.
No.
So they used to send us temporarily up to Alaska,
mm-hmm.
where we during the Cold War, had numerous active
alerts
with Russian aircraft flying along the coast of Alaska.
Now, you also told a wonderful story about having an alert and you thought it was a false alarm. Please tell me that one again.
Oh, we were on, yeah, we were on alert in at Spokane, and we were always, maybe once a week for several days, you would be on 24-hour alert, and you was based in a alert hangar at the end of the runway, and we were always ready to go. The aircraft were all fueled up downstairs, and if the alarm went off, we would slide down the barber pole and go take off and follow directions for whatever mission they had in mind. The airplanes were loaded with nuclear weapons, so the commander said you would never be flying those airplanes over the United States because it was too dangerous.
Oh, sure.
And So we were pretty relaxed when we were on alert. We figured we'd know it wouldn't get scrambled unless it was a major war. So we were there one morning. Well, actually, I can tell you exactly when it was. It was in 1962, in October. And we were watching the morning movie on television. And the scramble horn went off. And, of course, we said, oh, that's, it was something, they were doing a test or something because it was, we would never be able to fly these airplanes around. And we were just there on alert in case of the major war. And so the scramble horn kept going off. So I went up and picked up the phone to the alert center and I said, hey, Sergeant, the alert horn is going off down here. Is there something wrong? We're trying to watch the morning movie. And he said, Lieutenant, get those airplanes into the air. And I said, you're kidding, is that right? Yep, get them in the air, that's why we're blowing the horn. And so we all, it was four of us, and so we all took on four airplanes and took off, and it was the Cuban crisis in 1962.
Ooh.
So that was, I guess, it was alert all over the country, and we were a part of it. But we originally had thought it was just a test of the horn, because we had been told we would never be flying those airplanes around.
Oh my word!
So anyway, yeah, we took off, and we were there was a avionics in the aircraft that gave us directions on where to go. So we were to fly to the west coast and land at Payne Air Force Base in Washington. So we were instructed to go at maximum speed, which was a Mach 2. So we were going pretty fast.
Yeah.
It only took us a few minutes to get there. So,
oh my word.
Anyway,
wow.
That was our experience with the Cuban crisis.
Oh my. But you didn't actually drop any...
Oh, no. We were just...
You were just there.
They just wanted us to go and be in position
in case.
Closer to the ocean, yeah.
Oh, my word. How many years were you in the Air Force?
I was in the Air Force on active duty for 7 years and in the Air National Guard for an additional 14. So I ended up with 21 years in the Air Force for flying, military flying.
And what was your rank when you got out of the Air Force?
I was a lieutenant colonel.
That's a big bird, isn't it?
Well, it's almost.
Yeah, it's a big bird. Is there anything more you'd like to tell me about the Air Force before we go on to TWA?
While I was in the Air Force on active duty, we would be sent to Alaska on temporary duty because that there was a lot of activity off the shoreline of Alaska with Russian bombers and intelligence gathering aircraft from the Soviet Union. And the United States wanted to keep them away from flying over U.S. territory. So up there we got many active scrambles and intercepted Russian aircraft. And the aircraft were loaded with weapons in case they did come over. So the commander always warned us not to shoot down any of those airplanes unless the pieces fell on U.S. territory.
Love it.
But mostly we would pull up beside them and jot down, take pictures. We had cameras. We would take pictures and get their tail numbers and the type of aircraft. And they would probably take pictures of us. And
sure.
We would go back, but they were never caught going over the U.S. Territory up there. So
you protected the borders.
Well, we did.
Well, that was important. All righty. Now, did I get that right? Is it Transworld Airlines?
Transworld Airlines, yes.
Well, there's a nickname that I always heard that wasn't always...
was Teeny Weeny Airlines.
Teeny Weeny Airlines, right.
Yes.
Okay, when did you join TWA?
Well, when I got out of active duty on the Air Force in 1965, I joined TWA at that time. And
that's when you were stationed in Newark.
I went to training in Kansas City and was training on the Lockheed Constellation and subsequently was based in Newark Airport with TWA.
And did you fly domestic routes?
Initially, I flew domestic routes on the Connie, and we would go from Newark to domestic destinations and back. And after about a year of doing that, I was the airlines were expanding fairly rapidly mm-hmm. back then in
yep.
the 60s. And so I was sent to a training on the Boeing 707. So training was in Kansas City, Missouri. And so after that, I was based at JFK Airport,
ooh.
Flying the 707. Domestically, originally, and then international flights also from then on the 707.
Where did you fly internationally? All over or?
Oh, everywhere.
We
went all over the world. Yeah, everywhere from the Far East numerous destinations in Europe, the Middle East. We had bases in Cairo, and we flew to Israel also, to Tel Aviv, and all the way around into Bombay, India. They didn't have any flights. TWA did not fly to South America or to Southern Africa. But everywhere else, we ended up going on the 707.
Okay. Yeah. Did you fly 747s?
Yes, later on. I flew the 707 for many years. And then when we bought the 747, I checked out on the 747 and flew similar routes around the world on that.
A 747 holds a lot of people.
Yeah, it depends on how the interior was configured.
Smaller and smaller and smaller legroom.
Yeah, I think, yes. I think the TWA averaged probably around 400 people on airplane. There was a upper deck, which was a first class, and then the forward part of the aircraft was also a first class section, which had more room for people. And in the back, there was,
coach.
I think we had around 400 people generally on most of the airplanes.
Never flew first class. Always flew coach.
Yeah.
It was so expensive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, first class was
very expensive.
Very expensive. Yeah.
When we were coming back from Europe, we investigated the QE2 versus first class. And they were the same price.
Oh, no kidding.
At that time. This was back in 88 or either 88 or 92. And I asked the lady, I said, so what do you get with the airplane that you don't have with the QE2? And she says, well, she says, you get more legroom with the QE2.
Well, yeah, a lot more.
Did you have any favorite international routes that you really enjoyed?
I think I mentioned I liked flying to the Far East, and it's particularly flying into Hong Kong, because at the time it was a very interesting city. Mm-hmm. International city, and the approaches to the airport were quite interesting also.
Oh, yeah.
So that was one of my favorites. But I did like the European cities, Rome and Paris, and particularly Amsterdam were very, very interesting.
Schiphol?
Yep, Schiphol Airport, right. Yeah,
there you go. I've flown into that one.
Sure, yeah.
God bless.
I think Schiphol was below sea level.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was interesting. You've got some regulations as an airplane pilot. How often do you have to have physicals?
Well, there are very different classes of medical status.
Mm-hmm.
And a Class 1 medical authorizes the pilot to fly as a pilot in command on commercial aircraft. So, and that is a more extensive medical exam. And then there's a second class medical status, which allows you to fly private planes and be a pilot in command for non-commercial purposes. In other words, you can fly as the captain on a plane.
For cargo?
Yeah, that you own.
You know, that you own.
You know, that or that you rent
an
aircraft like that. But if you're flying for any commercial purposes, you need to have a Class 1. As a captain, a co-pilot can have a Class 2 medical, or there's also a Class 3, which is fairly lenient, but you can't be a pilot in command on any aircraft that you fly. So.
Oh, all right. Okay. And there's a retirement age.
Yes, it used to be age 60, and now it's age 65 for pilots for commercial airlines. But if you were flying privately, or even for private jet traffic, you can be over age 65. But for commercial airlines, mandatory retirement age is 65.
I had a friend that had to retire at 65, and he had to retire at 60.
60. Yeah.
He was very upset.
Yeah.
Because he was still mentally and physically capable.
Yeah.
But, you know, those were the rules back then.
Right.
Now, you had a very special flight in 1976. You flew somebody important from Rome.
Right. Actually, that was in 1987.
Oh, it was? Okay.
But the Pope did visit in 1976, and Transworld Airlines flew him around, but I didn't fly him in 1976.
But you did in 87.
1987,
okay.
Yeah. He visited the United States and visited several cities in the United States. And TWA, you mentioned that people would use the initials TWA. And at that time, the Pope called TWA Traveling with Angels.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Where are your wings? I don't see your feathered wings.
Oh, the wings. Yeah, so anyway...
How was the plane set up for him? Was it?
It was a 747, and we had printed on the side, which you probably see there, it says Shepherd One.
Yes.
The name of the aircraft we had printed on the side, and the papal seal was emblazoned on the side of the aircraft,
mm-hmm.
And the 747 had an upper deck. And the entire upper deck was configured for the Pope as his office. We had a beautiful large bed there for him. And he was quite comfortable flying around. In fact, the Pope, whenever he came to the U.S., always chose TWA. And other airlines were a little upset about that. But he always chose TWA.
Well, he knew a good airline.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Oh, dear.
So, and then... when he was finished, he wanted to go and visit Canada. So he went to Edmonton. We flew him up to Edmonton. He stayed there for a visit. And then from Edmonton, I flew him back to Rome. And so when we got on the airplane in Edmonton,
mm-hmm.
I had looked at the forecast of the weather in Rome at the time. It was terrible.
Oh.
It was going to be fog and poor visibility. And so I told the Pope that when he came on, I said, look, I said, if I'll take care of flying the airplane to Rome if you can take care of the weather. And I'll be darned if he didn't do that, because when we got there, the weather was beautiful.
Oh, my word. Well, he had influence.
I think so.
Oh, my... And you also made the comment that they had picked a good Protestant pilot to carry the Pope.
Yes, right, yes.
Oh,
yeah, everybody was surprised at that, yes.
But anyway, they picked their best pilot.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my. Did you pick him up in Rome?
No. We did not pick him up in Rome. He came, he used his own Alitalia, his...
Mm-hmm. Yep.
His country, they like to see him use the
the local
Italian national airline
mm-hmm.
to come over. So
okay,
yeah. So let's see, what did I have anything here about that trip? The Pope had made a number of trips around the world, and he had made numerous. Pope John, oh yeah, thank you.
This is
John
II.
John II,
mm-hmm.
right. Yep.
Okay. Now, after you retired from when did you retire from TWA? 1994,
yes.
Okay. But you didn't stop flying. You flew for another airline.
Yes, well, in 1994, TWA was purchased by American Airlines. Mm-hmm. I could have gone to American Airlines, but at the time, TWA had a contract with a Japanese airline to supply pilots to them, which we had been working with the Japanese airline for a number of years. We had several pilots assigned to them, even while TWA was in existence. But once TWA was absorbed by American Airlines, I decided to go and fly because I wasn't sure what the situation would be with American Airlines.
Yeah.
And so I knew the people at in Japan, and I flew with Nippon Cargo Airlines for a number of years after that.
You said you flew with them about 10 years?
Yeah, from 1994 to 2004, yeah.
How was it different? I mean, the structure, and you were working for the Japanese, you weren't working for Americans, so how was that different?
Well, of course, all of the management and the people were based in Tokyo, but the aircraft were manufactured by Boeing, so
okay.
They were all similar. They had slightly different rules and regulations, but it was nothing that was strange or unusual, but it was, you know, slightly different based on, but we would also be flying sometimes with Japanese pilots.
Did you speak Japanese?
No, they all spoke really good English.
Okay.
So yeah, we understood a few things of the Japanese.
Well, you pick it up.
But, yeah,
you pick it up.
Pick up a few things, but not enough to get,
not enough to have a conversation.
But you could order something in a restaurant, but that was about it.
Yeah, I could do, not in Japanese, but when I was in Europe, I could do French and German and Italian.
Yeah.
I like the Italian.
Yeah.
It was warm.
Yeah.
When did you buy your own plane?
Oh, well, that was certainly, I always like to say that that shows up. Demonstrates some extremely bad judgment.
No.
I bought my own airplane. Actually, I was a partner with one of the fellows I flew with in Nippon Cargo.
Oh.
We bought the airplane together. I was a partner with him. And it was in, I'm not sure. Let me look at my dates here. Yeah, it was probably in 2012, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we've owned the airplane for quite a while.
And what kind?
But then it's a Beechcraft Baron, they called it, and it's a twin-engine prop plane. It gets six people in it, and it can fly for. We'll go about 1,200 miles, probably. But we don't ever take it for long trips like that. We just usually go someplace for short trips around New England. But
when my husband turned 90,
yeah.
I chartered a plane from Great Barrington to take him around for an hour so he could have a... And he sat in the co-pilot seat.
Oh, yeah.
And he enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I mean, what do you give somebody that's 90? But he had a good time with it.
Oh, well, if it was a nice day.
It was a beautiful day, and
yeah.
The fellow that was the pilot, and I don't remember his name, was so kind. And he's now, Mr. McMillan, where would you like to go? And we flew over his house and my house, and we went up to Canaan, and we went over Indian Mountain School.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, Foster, of course, was looking for the bikini-clad ladies, but he didn't see too many.
Oh, yeah.
It was a little chilly.
Yeah, but you know, and you went to see the Hudson River.
And, and you know, it was. I think it was a high point for him. He'd been in big planes. He'd been in big planes, but this was a you know, a little private, four seater, and you know, he could direct where he wanted to go.
A single engine.
I think so. I wasn't exactly comfortable in it, but I figured, well, if something happens, we'll go together.
Yeah.
But it was a good experience, I think.
Yeah.
Something that you'd like to add to this before we close?
Well, after I purchased my own airplane and after I retired from Nippon at age 65, I went to work for. I couldn't get enough of it.
Uh huh.
So I went to work up at Pittsfield Airport in Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah.
For a company named Lion Aviation, who did jet charter flying with private jets. And so I worked with them for quite a long time. I'm not sure when I stopped there. 2012, maybe. And so I had many good experiences flying charter airplanes.
And that would be a private charter?
That's private charters, on jets for both international, but we never went overseas. We went to Canada quite frequently, and you know, people would want to mostly for businesses, business flying. And there was a company in Pittsfield named KB Toys.
Oh, sure.
You know them?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they had a contract with Lion Aviation, and we would fly them on business trips all over the country.
Yeah.
And in fact, they gave us shirts that said KB Toys on the side, you know, so that we could.
A little free publicity.
Nifty. Yeah, so that was a very good experience. And currently, I own the fellow that I bought my partner's section of the airplane that we own, bought his portion, and he went out and bought a private jet.
Ooh.
So we fly in that private jet around still.
Oh, good.
This day, so, yeah. So.
When Foster and I bought a car together, and we, you know, split the price, and the car is named Cashmore because it costs more cash than Foster ever spent on a car.
Oh.
And so we divided it this way, that if I had an accident, it was his part of the car.
Ah.
If he had an accident, it was his part of the car.
Sure, that's right,
oh, my.
So anyway, and I'm still flying, so, but mostly it's just with my own airplane, and as a co-pilot on a private jet.
Do you take your family up?
Yes, I have. In fact, I'm attempting to get my granddaughter interested in it. She's 14, and she's flown with us a lot of times. But you can't push anybody into aviation, I don't think.
No.
So she's got to get interested. But I'm exposing her to it so that she...
That's wise.
My daughter, Christina, I never pushed any of the kids to do any flying. But finally she came to me and asked if she could start flying. So got her private license and went to an aviation college and now is working in aviation. So,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's a good for a woman to have a skill like that. And she's doing very well.
Oh, yeah. It's a wonderful... It's a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, and as a matter of fact, these days there's kind of a pilot shortage.
Yes.
They're finding that they're running out of qualified people to fly all the airplanes that people want flown.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a good time to.
It's a good time to get into it.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
Great. Let's do this again sometime.